Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rebel Rouse from Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pennington.
And we're coming at you with another edition of the Fake News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Flying solo tonight with three of us. Tough to do. But no guest. We got probably an hour left. And lots to talk about. We got UFC 184 coming up. We just had a big fight. Bigfoot Silva got knocked the fuck out by Frank Mir. Coming off a long way up, so big story there. And can't forget Manny Pacquiao is fighting Floyd Mayweather May 2nd. Official.
I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, totally official.
I'll be in second with it.
Oh. You did hear about that. Okay, yes. Apparently they're meeting Manny at the Miami Heat game there. It was a big deal, this whole process. Got the deal done, and May 2nd. Big question is who's going to be on the undercard. We don't know yet, but I am betting that Miguel Cotto will be in the mix somewhere, because he's the only one I can find who doesn't have a fight that I can think of.
Person I know is going to be in the undercard, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be part of the televised undercard, is Philadelphia's with Jesse Hart, and I know his manager real well. And the reason I know that is because his manager posted it that Jesse's going to be on the undercard. You know, up and coming undefeated prospect. Father was a middleweight contender back in the 60s, and good prospect. You know, he's a super middleweight. And, you know, check him out. Jesse Hart worked hard. So this is going to be a big chance for him to really get a good bit of publicity and a good bit of exposure, and he's got to make the most of it.
All right. Well, we'll look for that one. I find it kind of interesting. Speaking of Miguel Cotto, looking at common opponents, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, of course, have a lot of them over the years, and Juan Manuel Marquez has never fought Miguel Cotto. Wouldn't that be a fight? You know, Bob Arum represents Juan Manuel. I'm pretty sure you could get Miguel Cotto to take that fight, unless there's a reason.
I could see that being an interesting fight.
So, you heard it here first, if it happens. I don't know why they haven't fought yet, but it seems like they should have. Anyway, Floyd obviously is undefeated, 47-0, 26 knockouts. He has two of the three titles up for grabs. Manny Pacquiao brings a WBO world welterweight title to the table. Floyd comes with the WBC world welterweight title and the WBA super world welterweight title. I think from now on we should call every super belt the WB whatever Super Mario Brothers world welterweight title. No, he's 57-5, Manny Pacquiao. 38 knockouts, 2 draws, and really, there's only just a handful of people who have given him trouble over the years. Timothy Bradley Jr., I don't count because that was a travesty of justice. But Juan Manuel Marquez, Eric Morales, and some dude I never heard of, Medgoan Singsarat. He had a tough time way back in his early career. Rustico Toracampo knocked him out, first out knockout in the third round back in 1996. That's been about it.
A lot of people like, oh, the Rick Montague, he has so many losses, like 5 or 6 losses. Oh, he's been knocked out 3 times. Well, yeah, he got knocked out by Marquez a couple years ago. It happened. And his other knockout losses were like, something like 34th per fight or something ridiculous like that, like 105 pounds. Now, with the fight with Marquez, if you go back and you look at those 4 fights, 3 of them were competitive and controversial. One of them was on the verge of being a blowout. And it just happened that the guy that was going to be the victor in the blowout walked into a punch. The first place, Pacquiao dropped him 3 times, 13 rounds, and then Marquez came back and boxed him on even terms. You could argue either way who won the decision. Marquez probably won more rounds, but Pacquiao had 3 knockdowns in that 4th round. The second fight, I thought, was the most clear victory out of any of them. That's when Pacquiao, he dropped Marquez early, and I thought he won 7 rounds to 5 plus with the knockdown. And then the third fight, a lot of people thought Marquez won, including myself, and Pacquiao got the decision. I thought pretty much the wrong call. Then he did the fourth fight, and Marquez did early knockdown, then Pacquiao knocks him back down. They're going back and forth. Then Pacquiao really starts to assert himself, and he has Marquez hurt and bad. And I remember, I didn't get to see it live that night because I was working, and by the time I got home, the fight had already started. So I was just following it online. And I remember the one guy that was taking it in literally wrote on there, they might stop the fight at the end of the round. Marquez is really taking a beating. Oh, my Pacquiao can get the fight over.
Well, we have second time with us.
All right.
So, Tom, are you having any visions about Pacquiao versus Mayweather?
Well, I 3-1 odds seem kind of, I don't know, Tony, what do you think about those odds?
What did it come out, like 2.5-1 or something?
Closer to 3 on a lot of places at this point. Now, granted, it's still early in the game, but it's more close, it's about 3-1 on a lot of sites. I mean,
I got to tell you, Tom, I'm very upset with you because you didn't tell us to bet big on the underdogs last week.
underdog singular. That was the underdogs ran the table. I believe that's a first. Yeah, that was just.
There's one sports book that got hit very, very hard. Apparently there was guys that made these $2 to $4 bets on all underdogs, and they paid off.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah, but this one 3-1. I don't know. I could understand maybe 2-1, but 3-1 seems. I don't know. To me, it seems excessive. But I don't know. Maybe they're just still looking at Pacquiao as sure not the same guy he was 5 years ago, and Mayweather isn't either. But I guess the consensus is now that Pac-Man has slipped a lot more. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the fact that. Whatever you think of the first Bradley fight or not, Pacquiao has 2 losses within the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you count any of that first to Eric Morales about 10 years ago that he lost, he had a knockout to Juan Manuel Marquez. He was wobbled in the second Bradley fight in the 3rd or 4th round. A lot of that, plays a factor into it. And people say, oh, damn, Mayweather's undefeated. I think more than anything, I think you got to go with a stylist issue here. I think Mayweather is going to try to make this fight uneventful. The more uneventful he makes it, the better it is for him, to be totally honest. And, unfortunately, that's not the best thing for boxing. What boxing really needs right now is a barn burner of a fight, holy shit, it cuts us out, and this is the fight to talk about. I think the hype is going to be much more than the actual fight is, unfortunately. My dad's funny. I bust his stones a lot just because I do. And I was saying to him, I was like, damn it, Dad. I said, we should have booked our trip to Vegas, weeks ago. And before the price was skyrocketed up, and just gambled, because Vegas is a gambling town, gambled that the fight was actually going to happen. I said, fuck that. This year, rooms are, tripling, and
prices
are going up so much. And what's funny? I had a college friend of mine. He was was actually my roommate in the 97 Nationals, so Rich, you wouldn't have known him, because he was gone by 98. And he would, you know, I think his family had some money, but whether with all or not, like, I remember we'd be in college together, and we're back, remember, this is 97, and we're in the cafeteria, and he's got the newspaper, and he is looking at flights and package deals that he went to Tyson Holyfield too, the fight. And he said, like, how he would go to big fights all the time, you know, and he would find packages out there, and, like, I don't know, you know, it is what he to me.
Well, you know, I think your point's well taken about this being a non-eventful fight, and when you look at Pac-Man's performances lately, who's he knocked out? I mean, his fights have been pretty uneventful. You know, compared, I mean, it's almost like he's lost that aura that he had 5 years ago, I guess. You know, especially with that brutal knockout. And that article from even his own trainer saying he's lost his testosterone. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll change my mind, but right now it's just, damn it, why didn't this happen before? You know, why now? Why not 5 years ago? But I guess we'll take what we can get.
Here's a question. Can Manny Pacquiao win by decision?
Yeah.
What?
Absolutely.
Which judge will have to be blindfolded?
Why do you think he doesn't have to be blindfolded? Can Pacquiao win by decision? Actually, I'm reading a lot of publications right now that would not be surprised to see Pacquiao win a decision.
Okay, well, now stop right there, because before the Hopkins Kovalev fight, who would have predicted it would go that way? Who? I mean, who's seen that coming? I mean, if Kovalev's going to win, you know he's got to knock Bernard out, and otherwise Bernard will just give him a boxing lesson. But don't try to outbox a master boxer like Bernard Hopkins. That's impossible. Well, it wasn't. And remember what Kathy Duva said after the fight. She said, so often in these big fights, the result we get is almost the exact opposite of what so many people thought. So,
okay, if Pacquiao can win by decision, then he doesn't have to get the knockout. Can he win this fight? That's the big question. Does he have a chance of beating up Floyd Mayweather and giving him that first loss? Anyway, crickets.
Well, I'm just waiting on a few days before when I get that report from Tony, you know, that,
Go ahead. Anyone?
What? I heard you saying crickets, but no, Tom's right. Tom knows what it is. You got to give me my 24/7s and my all accesses and, you know, all that. And it's like, and then I'll come up with my report.
Okay. All right. So I mentioned one sports book got hit really hard by it. If you guys think Fight Night 61, that was Bovada. And Frank Mir's victory over Antonio Silva in the main event marked the 10th win by an underdog, costing the this Bovada company nearly $1 million.
Woo! Well,
Parlay bet between $1 and $5 on all underdogs hit big. Now, this is the kicker. The sportsbook manager said one bettor had a $4 all underdog parlay. Guess how much this $4 ticket paid this dude? $4 ticket paid him $85,000.
Wow.
Another guy had four $1 parlays that paid $25,000 each. $100,000. And he said, we had at least a dozen of these bets that paid out $100,000. No, $10,000 or more. So a dozen bets, $10,000 or more. That's $120,000 again right there. So the loss purse nearly $1 million on the single event. And the manager said, we've taken so more money on the NFL or the NBA, that when you have these types of parlay winners, it's hard to hurt our business. The UFC, this will be hard to come back from.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I can't recall, even in boxing or MMA, where that's happened. I mean, I'm sure it has before. Maybe I could get nerdish and Google it, but I really can't recall anything like that. I mean, sure, we've seen upsets. We've all seen upsets, but not the entire card. Wow. That is just...
And, of course, you know, the main event was kind of a surprise for me, but, you know, Frank said it best in his post-fight interview. Sometimes you just need some time off and you need to refocus some things and get your shit together, basically. And that's what he did. And poor Bigfoot Silva, you know, just keeps...
Yeah. What do I keep saying, though, about so many MMA fighters don't really work their boxing like they should. And in this case, it was Tony. Did you see that fight, Tony? Frank Mir and Bigfoot, the main event last Sunday night. Well, It was a beautiful hook. Yeah, it was a beautiful hook off the jab. Just an absolute classic textbook hook off the jab. And Mir had shown some boxing skills before, but not like he did there. And then he came on and he was saying about his boxing coach. He says, I never really had boxing down much. I've been working hard on it. Well, you know, you kind of wonder, why has it taken 14 years, you know? Well, that's the way it is. Hey, better late than never, maybe.
What's that old saying? The bigger they are, what?
The bigger they are, the harder they fall. There you go. Oh, poor Bigfoot. Man, what a crushing defeat for him. Because this really did have the feel of a loser leaves town.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Bigfoot will still fight for paydays, but I don't think anyone's going to look at him as a serious contender anymore. I mean, he had so much to overcome, and as long as Cain Velasquez is the champ, why do we need to see a third time with him? So.
Yeah, you have to worry about position issues with him, too. He's had a lot of bad outcomes like this. One particularly really bloody fight where he tried to change the rules afterwards on elbows. This fight, another knockout, does not look good for him. He doesn't have a good chin. I know he's got this tooth that keeps growing back on him. He's got the gigantism shit going on. He's just got a bad chain of events going on. And I'd like to see the guy retire, you know, because how many times do you need to get knocked out to figure out that he's going to be taken on? No, he had a good career. He had a lot of fun.
Don't you think that that's an example that you can't always judge a book by its cover? Because if you look at that guy, you think that you've got to have those Jack Dempsey-type gloves, allegedly, with the plaster of Paris hardened in them before you could knock this guy out. I mean, he looks like 80,000 years ago, you know? And I guess you can't always judge a book by its cover, for sure. Well, I mean, I felt bad for him, but, hey, someone's got to win, someone's got to lose. Got to be happy for Mir.
Yep. And he really didn't look that great as far as shape-wise in her body. I think he's looked better in previous fights. He really didn't look like that he was that cut, like he was working that hard either. I think he's kind of got 1 foot out the door already. Maybe he's already looking at this as just another payday. But anyway, tough loss for him. Michael Johnson got a big win over Edson Barboza, unanimous decision in the co-main event. And our boy, our former guest, Sam Alvey.
Smiling Sam.
Looking for a bonus after the fight, calling out Dana White.
Well, that guy has the attitude going through life. I mean, he's got that big grin on his face. I mean, you could just tell he can't wait to see the sun come up in the morning. What a what a breath of fresh air that guy is. And remember, he was leaving, and the Brazilian fans really warmed up to him. I mean, I know that a lot of times, you know, they're not going to cheer for the American guy. They're going to cheer for their own, but they don't have to boo him like he was Chael Sonnen, you know, because he didn't say all the things that Sonnen said about the Brazilians. I mean, he seemed like he was well-received, very well-received. Nice to see that.
Yeah, and he took care of business quick. First round, 334, knockout. And Cesar Ferreira was pretty hot stuff going into this. He's the winner of the Brazilian Tough Show, and here comes Sam Alvey out of another promotion. And he was on one of the American Toughs, but didn't really last too long in the UFC before going back to the company we got him through on our show. And then Adriano Martins beat Rustam Khabilov. That was another upset. Khabilov was having pretty good success until this point. He lost a split decision there. Frankie Sands beat Thierry Alcantara by unanimous decision. Santiago Prong Zanibio beat Sean Strickland by unanimous decision. One of my favorite fights of the night, Marion Renault beat the crap out of Jessica Andrade, got her in a triangle choke there, and took her out. 154.
Yeah, there was now you're aware of the trash talk that went on before that fight with the Brazilian gal saying, well, a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu given in Brazil is better than a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu given in America. Well, okay. How'd that work out?
Yeah, and I guess they're pronouncing it Andrade now. I don't know. Whatever. I say Andrade, you say Andrade. Submission, that was the first round submission. First round end to the fourth fight of the night. Matt Dwyer knocked out William McCarrion by Superman punch there in the first round.
Yeah, Mike that was wild.
I did not see that one, actually. Mike De La Torre beat Thiago Dos Santos de Silva, or E. Silva, by first round knockout as well. Punches. Then we had a couple other fights. Douglas Silva de Andrade beat Cody Gibson by unanimous decision, and Ivan George, whatever the fuck you pronounce. Ivan George, I think they were calling him. He beat Josh Shockley by unanimous decision. That's it. So, that's UFC Fight Night, Bigfoot versus Mir. We also had a fairly decent boxing match over the weekend. Somebody lasted longer than five rounds with Kennedy Golovkin.
Yeah. You know what? I give Martin Murray a lot of credit. You know, he came there to fight. You know, he landed some good body shots. He landed even a couple good hooks to the head. But, like, Golovkin is extremely bad. You know, he just soft. And he started, you know, he hurt him pretty bad in the fourth round with that body shot. He knocked him down. He knocked him down again. And then the timekeeper rang the bell about 10 seconds early. And I remember as soon as that happened, a friend of mine, Steve, put on Facebook, said, anybody else notice that round ended early? And I said, yes, Steve. And I said, and I don't think it's going to do Martin Murray any favors. And it didn't. Because then he ended up taking six more rounds of beating. He had to put a fight finally that stopped.
Well, I'll say this much. He came to fight, though. I mean, he didn't just fold. A lot of guys.
Not take that away from you.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys would have folded after that fourth round. I mean, I didn't see it, but from the reports I got on it, that was god awful. And he hung in. I mean, he's got all my respect, for sure. I mean, and he didn't fight to survive either, from what I was able to figure out. He was really going for it.
Thank you, bitch.
Yes.
All right, we're reconnected, I guess.
Yes.
Back live. Sorry about that. I think if I could just shit the bed, because I just found out that Kimbo Slice is fighting Ken Shamrock.
No shit.
20th. You heard it.
No shit.
Hasn't even been announced yet, but it's on SureDog, I think.
Crazy. Yeah. I got a funny Kimbo Slice story for you guys, and actually, this was a serious question that I got at work just a couple of days ago. Is Tom back on the air yet?
Not yet.
Damn. Well, talk about Kimbo and Ken Shamrock, but I want to pose this question when Tom gets back on the air.
It's the only fight on the card, Bellator 138, Kimbo versus Shamrock. I just saw it. This fight was supposed to happen, remember? And then they got that guy, Seth Petruzzelli, after Ken Shamrock split his head open backstage.
Oh, right. I remember that.
So now Ken Shamrock is finally wanting to fight Kimbo in a match that was supposed to happen anyway. Kind of funny.
That was like, wasn't it?
Yeah, way back
in the day. I was at my friend's wedding, and we saw the highlight of the thing after it happened. We were like, oh, shit.
Seth Petruzzelli comes in and beats up Kimbo Slice, and all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, he's a fake. So he was pretty much all done after that to get back into the mix with the UFC and the Ultimate Fighter, and then he went to boxing. Got rattled in his last fight in boxing, so now he comes into Bellator, and he's fighting an old UFC guy, Ken Shamrock. So we'll see. We'll see how he does there, but that should be an interesting one. I guess Ken Shamrock is not fighting Patty.
Yeah, right.
Unless he's getting into Bellator for his next fight. Patty's had enough. No. Patty was the other guy, right? Yeah. So, did you hear that, Tom?
Yeah, that's got to be a spectacle. Tell me you're not going to watch that. Okay. Tell me you're not going to watch that. Now feel your nose growing. I mean, what a freak show. I mean, wow. I got to get my head into that one too. Because you would think.
And we got fights tomorrow night at the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut.
Hold on, before we go on to that, I got a question I got to pose to both of you guys.
Oh, that's right.
And it's perfect that you brought Kimbo into the equation here, because this is a question that I was seriously asked about a week ago. And when I started that series, I was writing for Fight News Unlimited back a couple of years ago when I was taking fighters from different areas and I was matching them up. And I only did it about five or six different matchups. But the first thing I wrote was my intro saying, you know, if you have any suggestions, you know, feel free to send them to me. I said, only people that have legitimately competed in a professional boxing ring. So I'm like, don't put guys like, you know, Apollo Creed or Ivan Drago in there. And I was like, and don't put Kimbo Slice. This is not me. I said, you have not had a sanctioned professional boxing match. And then like a year or so later, he has one, and Rich is like, oh, Rich sends me my article back saying, I guess you can incorporate him now. I said, shut up, Rich. Company at work the other day, completely out of the blue, and he goes, I got a question for you. You're talking about different fight matchups, and we're talking about Mayweather Pacquiao, and he goes, Kimbo Slice versus Mike Tyson. I said, excuse me? He's in a boxing match. Kimbo Slice versus Mike Tyson. And I said, well, can you elaborate? Mike Tyson 1988 or Mike Tyson now? And he said, Mike Tyson 1988. And I said, okay. Tom, who do you pick to win that fight?
Mike Tyson.
Well, I mean, the fact that this guy, I think my response would have been, I don't want to use profanity on the show, but you are one tough, you know. Mike Tyson, 1988, against any form of Kimbo Slice, should be over within the first round at the latest. I would go for a minute or two.
You know what's funny? Here's what I said to him. I said, Mike Tyson, early and brutally. You think?
Yes.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
He said, you don't think Kimbo will go a few rounds? You don't think he'll go two, 3 rounds? I said, I don't think he'll go 2-3 minutes.
Well, Well, you know they don't do out-of-competition testing for crack, so.
There's no disrespect to Seth Petruzzelli. I was a fan of his. You know, he was going down to Brazil and that jungle fighting stuff way back 2001-ish, you know, way back when. I was a big fan, but he does not punch with anywhere near the efficiency of a prime-time Mike Tyson. And the fact that someone would even have the nerve to call and ask a question like that. It's like, you know, what the hell are you thinking? Oh, man, I mean,
here's the punchline, because a couple of the guys that I eat lunch with at work are a couple of boxing fans. And I'll sit there and we'll have great discussions at lunch. You know, we'll have really good discussions. And the one guy, this guy Wendell, I've become friends with, and Wendell disagrees with everything I say. We were talking Mayweather and Leonard, and I said, Leonard. He said, no way, Mayweather. You know, we were talking Tyson and Frazier. I said, Frazier. He said, no way, Tyson. You know, but we'll banter each other back and forth, and we've become pretty good friends. So he was out a few days, and he was back yesterday, and he was sitting there, we're having lunch together, and this guy James is walking by. I said, James, come over here. James Wendell. Wendell James. James, ask Wendell what you asked me. And you could see, well, James is dark-skinned, but you could almost see him blushing. And he said, he's like, he looks like this is my Tyson. And Wendell started laughing at him, which was cracking me up. He's like, this is my Tyson. You think? Yeah, I did, you know? And
yeah.
We're laughing. I said to them, and I said, really? And literally, you don't think he would laugh if you asked? And we're like, no, he wouldn't. And I said, let me add another factor into this. I said, let's make it right now, 2015. Give Mike Tyson 2 to 3 months to get back in shape, and now match him up. And you know what I say? He says, what? Tyson, early and brutally.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, I mean, as far as this Shamrock fight, you know, Kimbo does have a big punch, but that's about it.
Yeah,
and I don't think he has. I don't think he has the skills to stop Shamrock's takedown. And once the fight's on the ground, that's Kimbo's Achilles heel. He's never really learned submissions. He's never learned positioning. Shamrock will even a 51-year-old version of Shamrock's going to finish that one pretty quick. Now, if Shamrock gets hit on the way in, anything can happen. But the more I think about this, I'm going with Shammy.
Yeah, I know you mentioned it before, Tony, but the only way Tyson and Kimbo would fight today is if Kimbo ripped off the head of one of Tyson's pigeons.
He did that. He was gone.
Yeah, right. Anyway, Bellator 134, they're calling it the British Invasion. Got a guy named Liam McGeary headlining this event. He's 9-0, fighting Emmanuel Newton. He's a practitioner of the spinning backfist. He's got a lot of knockouts that way. Has a little bit of a drunken master style. I really like his striking style. And he has a lot of big cardio. Right now, 25-7 in his record. That's right there, I think, but that's got one draw as well. I like him to win this one.
Yeah, I do too, because every time I've underestimated him and thought he was going to be in for a hard night, and even if he is in for a hard night, he's got that willpower. He can come from behind, which is not a common commodity always. And I just think that he's one of those guys that he's got that freaky style that it's hard to defend against. It's hard to prepare for a style like that. I mean, I don't think you can find too many guys in the gym that can get away with that spin stuff. So I'm going with him. Of course, I hope he's trained hard, though. This Brit's a dangerous, dangerous, powerful hitter.
When I watch Newton, I know I said this before, but I always wonder, why is it everybody's got to throw the spinning back fist? Why not just a regular back fist? So many times, it's when I'm hitting the bag, I want to throw it, and I do throw it. Just a regular back fist. I mean, you can throw another punch right behind it, too. If you've got some boxing experience, you know, you mix that stuff in. Perfectly legal. Regular
mm-hmm.
back fist. I don't understand why you got to have the spin.
Well, the guys that are good at it feel they get a little more torque in doing it. Now, I always sucked at doing it with the fist or with the kicks. You know, in the old taekwondo days, it was the last chapter of What's the Use. It was a great stand-up comedy routine. If you'd see me try to throw a spinning back kick in any of those tournaments. So I never could do it. But the guys that do it say that it can catch an opponent by surprise, and if it lands, it has devastating power with that torque. So I don't know, and it's amazing that we're seeing more of it actually work, because I always felt the burden was on the fighter to prove they could do it. But these guys are doing it, so it's going to be interesting. Fascinating, that whole card tomorrow night. It's just really exciting.
Paul Daly back in the mix. Of course, he's had some trouble, some controversy, some illegal fight activity there with Josh Koscheck. didn't help his career out any. And he's 35-13-2 going into this bout against Andre Santos in the co-main event. Santos is 37-9. It's a heck of a lot of experience. And Bellator guys, they don't have any guys with that experience. So it's a big fight. And we got Mo Lawal taking on an interesting opponent here in Czech Congo. This could be a barn burner.
Yeah.
Like, I think. 14-4 is Lawal. Czech Congo is 22-9-2.
Yeah. Did Mo move up to heavyweight, or did Congo come down to 205?
I don't know. The Sherdog has a habit of not listing weights.
Because it seems like going to 205 would be a hell of a cut for a guy as big as Czech Congo.
Right.
That seems like it would be a hell of a cut. So maybe Mo went up. Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
I have Linton Vassell, who is 14-4, fighting Ramo Thierry Sakuju, who's 16-12. Brennan Ward fighting Curtis Millender. Ward 9-3. Millender is 7-0. Matt Bassett, 13-6, fighting Josh LaBerge, 9-0. And a guy I used to watch down in Plymouth, Massachusetts a lot, Josh Diekman, looking real good. He's 15-5 now, fighting Raphael Butler, 8-1-1. And we got Tamden McCrory, 12-3, fighting Jason Butcher, who's 8-1. Neiman Gracie, 2-0. Bobby Flynn, who's 4-2, and the first fight of the night, Marvin Maldonado, 2-3, fighting Blair Tugman, who's 6-5.
Jason Butcher. Butcher, isn't that a great name for a fighter? Jason Butcher,
huh? And of course, we can't forget the big UFC 184 card this weekend. I thought I had it loaded up, but I'm about to reload it. Main event, though, easy to remember. Ronda Rousey versus Pat Zingano. That's a big one. This is both of them are undefeated. So this is it. This is the be-all, end-all for the competition here within her division in the UFC. This is the last chat standing.
Well, I don't know if my heart's involved in this, but I initially said it wouldn't get out of the first round, and now I'm saying it probably won't get out of the second. But my heart's kind of hoping Kat can get through that first round. But I kind of got a bad feeling. I don't know if you caught the show last night, you know, the UFC Weekly, when Daniel Cormier was saying that Kat had better not go to the ground with Ronda, and especially not be on her back. Well, you know, Kat, last I checked, was a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Now, if she can't hang on the ground with Ronda, where are we going here with this? I mean, she's got to try to outstrike her, and I think Ronda's striking has really improved, so I think it's going to be a very bad night for Kat. But she's got to be the sentimental favorite when you consider everything she's been through. What a tough woman.
Yeah.
And on that... Go through the card. Then we'll talk a little bit about that interview with Ronda. But let's get the rest of the card here.
Way back when we first started doing the radio show, I think we interviewed Kat, actually. Either Kat or her husband, one of the two.
Okay, how long ago was it, Rich? How long ago? How far back?
2006, 2007. It was
I don't think Kat was even fighting then. I think she was just... Because she initially just started training, had no plans on fighting, and then her husband-to-be, who was her coach at the time, really seen potential in her and said, let's get after it. But I don't think she started her career then.
Well, it must have been her husband, and she was managing him or something, because I remember getting messages from him. Anyway, that was back in the day. So 9-0 versus 10-0. Kat is 9-0. Ronda is 10-0. And the belt's on the line, of course. So very big fight.
And somebody's O has got to go. I love that saying. Somebody's O.
Cat looks good, but, you know, Ronda's style is just so impossible to get through. You look at Miesha Tate. She's officially now, again, the person who lasted the longest against Rousey.
Well, the whole thing here is she has picked up her stand-up game. I mean, it's to the point where it's very respectable. I mean, it's not her main thing. But so far, no one has been able to hang with her on the ground. And I'm not saying Cormier's right all the time about this, but when he was saying the Cat needed to keep the fight standing, and I'm just kind of scratching my head saying, well, I guess he's saying officially she doesn't have much chance, because you'd have to think her strength is on the ground. I mean, all those years studying jiu-jitsu with her husband is a high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and yet Cormier's saying don't go on the ground? Well, what'd she spend all those years for? So it's just, I don't have a good feeling. But I hope she gets out of the first round, but I honestly don't see it getting out of the second. But I hope I'm wrong, and I'll have a big plate of crow next week to eat.
Well, Kat Zingano, I think she's got a chance, but really she's got to knock Ronda out. I mean, that's why it has to go stand up for her to win. I think she's a tough girl. She's got muscles. She's got strength. She's got all that skill and all that stuff, but as soon as Ronda gets the takedown, it's over for her.
Also remember, too, that she's historically been a slow starter. Now, hopefully she's hired a sports psychologist to get her out of that, because a slow start against Ronda, because Ronda comes out like she's shot out of a cannon. So I think a slow start would be devastating.
If you watch the UFC Embedded episode, you see that even Ronda is aware from watching Kat's fights that, you know, as soon as you think you've got her, she comes out of nowhere and she's back on you. So she's going to want to finish Kat very early if possible.
Yes, exactly. And I think that the longer, that's why initially my gut feeling was I didn't see it getting out of the first round, and I don't know, maybe my heart's talking to me a little more than it should, but I just don't see it getting out of the second. However, maybe the longer it goes, the better Kat's chances are, but I just don't see it. And Ronda has also shown no cardio weakness. I mean, she's shown no weakness. But, so there we go.
We got Holly Holm taking on Raquel Pennington. Holly Holm, the ex-boxer, 7-0, undefeated. This is still her UFC debut, though, I believe. She had that broken arm, derailed this fight that she was supposed to have with Raquel Pennington a long time ago, and now it's finally happening. Pennington is 5-4. We got Josh Koscheck. Speaking of Paul Daly and Josh Koscheck just a minute ago, Koscheck is 17-8. Jake Ellenberger is his opponent, 29-9.
You think that's a loser leave town? What do you think about that one?
For Jake, I don't know about Koscheck. He's got too big a name.
Well, what's he done in the past? Yeah, but what's he done in the past several years, though?
You have all the recognition, but you don't get applied to the same roles that, you know, other guys do. Jake's got a pretty big name too, but.
Well, I don't know. You know, when Jake came along and knocked out Fitch. Remember? He knocked out John Fitch, which was that was unheard of. Nobody stopped John Fitch. Nobody. St. Pierre beat on him for five rounds and couldn't stop him. And I don't think the fight went more than a minute or two. And I'm thinking, my God, this guy is a monster. That great Division I wrestling background, power, just all he had. If he adds a little Muay Thai, and adds a little jiu-jitsu. And that fight against McDonald seemed to do something to Ellenberger. I don't know if it's a mental thing, but he has not been right since that fight. We'll see. I mean, he was so pumped to win that thing, and the trash talk was so much. I just wonder what there was between them, because McDonald has the personality of, you know, he's got that serial killer persona about him, you know, that he just never says much. He's a little Hannibal Lecter there, you know, but... Yeah, Ellenberger is just, that was a terrible performance for him that night. He just has not been able to get back on track. So this is, I just think it possibly could be a loser leave town for either one of them.
Well, it would be his 10th loss. 29 wins. I'm sure he wants to get that 30th win before he hangs it up officially. So that's a motivating factor for him, I bet. Josh Koscheck, like I said, I don't think he's in danger of losing his job if he loses this fight, but I bet you, you know, he was willing to fight Ellenberger because Ellenberger hasn't been good lately. And he probably thinks he can win this fight, so he's going to
And I would also think from Koscheck's standpoint, if he loses, that's going to tell him a lot of where he's at.
Yeah. We also had Alan Juban, 10-3, fighting Richard Walsh, who's 8-2. Tony Ferguson from The Ultimate Fighter, 17-3, fighting Gleison Tebow, who's 33-10.
That's exciting. That's the one I'd like to see. Yeah.
Ferguson has had some easy opponents lately, so we'll have to see how this one goes.
Yeah, but that's fixing to change. Yes.
Mark Munoz is back in action. I'm not the root against Bing Lawyers. He's not sponsored by Science. He's 13-5, fighting Rowan Carnero, who's 19-9. So I don't have to root against him, but I'm still going to. Anyway, Norifumi Yamamoto, 18-6, fighting Roman Salazar, who's 9-3. We got another Ultimate Fighter guy, Diego Lima, 10-2, fighting Tim Means, who's 22-6-1. He was on The Ultimate Fighter, too. Derek Lewis, 11-3, fighting Ruan Potts, who's 8-3. Second fight of the night, James Krause, 21-6, fighting Valmir Lazaro, who's 12-3. And first fight of the night is BCO Fullen, 9-4, fighting Alexander Torres. And James Krause had some interesting comments. Tom, you sent me the link. I had already read it by the time you sent it to me. But James Krause, another one of those guys, upset a little bit with the fighter pay situation. Despite saying that he's happy with what he's made, he's made more than he's ever made in his life with the UFC. He says, quote, "The window that we as professional athletes have, especially at the high level and especially in the UFC, is very small. Hell, for all I know, this could be my last fight in the UFC. You don't know that. You never know. So you have to be prepared for everything. In the NFL, you have contracts and stuff like that. In the UFC, our contracts don't mean shit. For us, anyway. For them, they do. There's no security behind it." So, interesting. He also said he lost $20,000 in the Reebok deal already because people are dropping him. And he's concerned because he doesn't know how much money he's going to make with this Reebok deal. He took $100,000 in bonus money home after UFC 161 in 2013 by winning Fight of the Night and Submission of the Night honors. Now they only have the Performance of the Night situation, so you don't get the Submission and Knockout of the awards. So that cuts down on the possibilities there right away. You got this Reebok deal, people don't know what they're going to get now. But you know, it's more and more times you're seeing these guys come out and talk. They're from the lower tier. Here's a guy, he's got a record. He should be up near the top. He's 21-6. That's a hell of a record. But, you know, until these guys at the higher level start speaking out for these type of guys like James Krause, who unfortunately has to get out there and talk for himself and risk now not going up the ranks because they won't give him the good fights anymore because he's opens his mouth. I hate to think about how, you know, a person like that would end up treated like that, but I bet it will happen.
Yeah.
But he's more, instead of, you know, shooting himself in the foot, blaming his bosses for everything, he's more kind of putting it in the light of, well, what if I'm injured, you know? I have no money because I'm injured. I have to create monthly recurring income. His only job is the UFC. He says, you know, how am I going to get that income if I'm injured? With the Reebok deal, can't get that money because you have to fight to get that Reebok money. So, very interesting point I never heard before put that way. So he says, I definitely don't want to act like I'm underpaid because I've never made this much money in my life. so I'm not trying to bitch and complain about pay. However, I am trying to bitch and complain. I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have this lawsuit here we haven't talked about in a while, this antitrust lawsuit, chain of events, chain of lawsuits going on against the UFC. Still boiling in the mix, but last week I started thinking about, well, what if that's not the big thing the UFC has to worry about? Because here we have a situation now where they said, oh, we're not going to do this drug testing policy. Then, what, 6 weeks later, or less probably, oh, now we're going to do this drug testing policy. Open them up to a new round of lawsuits to people who can now UFC knew they had a problem and did nothing about it and purposely did nothing about it and then totally switched gears and did something about it. I mean, it's just not a good look, and I think it's worse than anything the NFL is getting busted for anytime recently. Just does not look good. And you know, it basically makes them look like they've condoned this type of drug usage behind the scenes. So anyway, that's kind of a tangent.
Well, it just kind of raises that question: who's minding the store? You know, who's running the show here?
Right. And Krause doesn't think a fighters union is going to happen anytime soon. He said, if you put John Jones, Anderson Silva, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, if those four said, look, we're done, I think it would change. But the UFC takes so good care of that tier, why would they ever say anything? They take care of their stars, that's for sure. Those guys aren't hurting for money at all. He said, I'll be damned if I get cut one day and I'm just sitting there with empty hands saying, what's next? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to be a guy that's 35 years old fighting to keep my life going. And, you know, I read this, and I actually thought immediately of, guess what? The NOS commercial on all the tough Ultimate Fighters and the, you know, the Fox Sports commercial. NOS, you know, the old guy, 80-something years old, and he's still taking punches.
Yeah.
I think that's the UFC model, you know, that's what they want. They want the guy who's going to fight 80-something years old. He got a scar down his chest, you know, gray hair. No complaints. That's the best they want. That's why they got the commercial out there. Anyway.
Yeah, so I guess by those standards, I'm still a spring chicken, so.
Matt Mitrione came out of the woodwork recently with some interesting comments about PEDs. He says, there might be a problem with PEDs, but I think it's because the sport hasn't evolved enough to realize that kicking each other's ass or kicking your own ass every single day, day in and day out, with limited recovery, is ridiculous. So, I know that's been said before by different people in different ways, but I haven't heard this argument recently. That strength and conditioning is the problem. Everybody works so hard, you don't want to go in there and half-ass it, and you get hurt. And that's why injuries, obviously, that Dana White is so pissed about, because it's canceling fights. Mitrione is just saying these people are not doing proper training camps. They're not taking time to rest. You're not going to go in the pool and swim rather than sparring every day when you're getting ready for a fight. That's what you should be doing. So he said himself, you know, he's got all these coaches coming up to him. They're going to make him do shit till he pukes. You go to hell, guy. I don't need anybody running me to the ground so much that I puke. That's not the answer. All that does is just ruin your neurological system and everything else.
And it just seems like we're in a vicious cycle now that everyone wants to outwork the other guy. I mean, it was always like that, you know, even back in the old days, it was somewhat like that. But, you know, when I was at Strong Style 10, 11 years ago, everyone, we really trained hard. But it just seems now that, you know, because like I said back then, if you get in there and you're 100%, you probably haven't trained correctly. But if you get in there at 50%, that's ridiculous. You're cheating the fans, you're cheating yourself and everything else. So usually there was always, our guys were a little banged up, but maybe like they were 80, 90% what they should be. But very seldom were they 100%. But now it's just out of control.
Yes, sir.
And you know, you got to wonder about this chemical warfare stuff, because years ago there was a talk in competitive bodybuilding, how they wanted to get that out. But if you look at these guys on stage now, look at the Mr. Olympia contestants now compared to back in the 70s, back in Arnold Schwarzenegger's day. Arnold would be lucky to be in the top 10 if he had the same physique he had then now. So if these guys have figured out a way to beat the drug tests, I mean, there's all kinds of, it's like point, counterpoint. It's like the computer hackers, I guess. There's always these guys that are thinking of ways to do it, so... Are they really going to be able to get rid of this stuff? I mean, it's an open-ended question. I don't really think anyone knows the answer to it, but it just, I don't know, problems, huh?
I don't know if they'll get rid of it, but if they start doing what they're saying they're going to do and suspend people for like 4 years for a violation, yeah, people are going to think twice about doing it.
Okay, but what if these guys hire a coach, like I'm convinced a lot of these bodybuilders have done, that can tell them how to beat the test? I mean, apparently these guys have ways of doing it. I mean, look at these guys in the Mr. Olympia. You can't tell me that they're perfectly just, you know, that they're there on creatine and protein shakes. You see what I mean? So there must be some way that these guys are beating the test. There has to be, unless maybe they're just not testing that much.
Well, you know, they've got these World Anti-Doping Agency people. They've got different companies specializing in this stuff now. They've caught other people that have tried to hide it. You know, look at Barry Bonds with his clear shit that he was using. They found out all that. So I think if they really take it seriously and they put the money they're talking about putting into it, then... you will be able to find these guys, whether they're trying to hide it or not. I mean, look how many people that were licensed to fight, set up for a fight, knew they were going to be tested, and still got caught. Now, imagine you take that situation and you make it 10 times more likely for people to get caught by doing the random testing when they're not even licensed. You're going to get these people when they're not expecting it. So the key to beating the test is knowing when the test is. Don't know what the test is, you're fucked if you're doing it. So I think that's going to be the big kicker here, because before, like they said, they were just going to do the Nevada or the state athletic commissions. They're going to give them money, and the state athletic commissions are going to do it. Like I said, the big problem with that is everybody who doesn't have a fight coming up is going to know they can juice. Now you're not going to have that situation. They really do random testing like they say they're going to do. There's nowhere to hide. That's what they want. That's the way it should be. So, it's going to be really tough.
I mean, it sure didn't work in bodybuilding. Or maybe they abandoned the effort in bodybuilding. Because that was the big thing back in the 80s, and they started having these natural contests. And they just said, we're going to clean up professional bodybuilding. It's become chemical warfare. It's bad for the health of the contestants. And I don't think it's done much of anything. And I'm just saying, the proof is you look at them now compared to then.
There's not as much urgency in bodybuilding, because who are you hurting? Yourself. You're not hurting anybody else except for the opponent that you're beating, because he's not doing enough juice, I guess. I don't know. Who are you hurting? You know, if you're jacked up from steroid as a bodybuilder, you're hurting the gym.
Well, yeah, and I think there was a thing back in the early 80s when I was a lot more into that scene that they were hoping bodybuilding could become more mainstream, but, I mean, let's face it, it's a freak show. It's never going to appeal to the mass of people. So maybe they just gave up on it and said, hey, what the hell, let these guys use all they want. I mean, I don't know this. But if they haven't done that, then there is some way that these guys are beating the test, and I would think that they'd be slightly ahead of the fighters, because these guys have been juicing heavy for a long time, and they really know, they know all the tricks, if there are any tricks. Maybe there aren't any tricks. I mean, I hope you're right, Rich, that they can do that, but maybe there aren't any tricks. Maybe in bodybuilding, they've just given up. Said, go ahead, juice however what you want. Do whatever you want. We don't care. We're not going to test you.
I don't know. But anyway, I did want to mention there's a new first for the Air Force Academy. First female fighter at the Wing Open. An Air Force junior from Chicago, a female. I don't know her first name. Her first name is not in front of me here. My last name is Prusco. She's a junior from Chicago. And she fought her cadet coach, a girl named Hope Stremcha, and she won a decision in the first women's bout in the 58-year history of the Wing Open Championships. Now, I didn't get to compete in the Wing Open because my academics were so horrible. I was banned from it. I was on the team and everything. I could have fought in it, but I did watch it. It's a very big event, you know, one of the biggest events that the whole cadet corps has. Really puts boxing in center stage, and it's a great event. Like it says, 58-year history. So this girl played baseball, basketball, and softball. She tried boxing for the first time in the school year when she joined a new women's boxing club that her coach helped form, and she beat her coach. So quite a big story for her, breaking the women barrier there at the Air Force Academy in that event. It's pretty good stuff. And our old buddy there, Eddie Wishers, is long gone now, but good for his program, another milestone for something that he spent so much time putting together. Good stuff all around there. I did want to mention a couple boxing matches, kind of... skipped over a lot of boxing while we were talking about mixed martial arts this episode. We got some overtime. So, first off, we've got an interesting bout overseas. Let's see, where is it? Turkey. If you happen to be in Turkey on Friday, Sanir Solis at heavyweight. He's 20-2 with 13 knockouts, fighting Tony Thompson. Tony Thompson is 39-5 with 26 knockouts. This is for the WBC Continental America's heavyweight title. It's great. Great that the Continental America's title is up for grabs in Turkey. It's great.
Wow. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. well, we got some USA Fox Sports 1 fights on tomorrow night. Main event, welterweight Pablo Cesar Cano, 28-4 with one draw, 21 knockouts. He's fighting Juan Carlos Abreu, who's 18-1-1 with 17 knockouts. And another one of the De La Hoyas in action, Diego De La Hoya. He's a super bantamweight, fighting an 8-rounder. It's Manuel Roman, who's 17-3-3 with 6 knockouts. Diego is 8-0 with 6 of his own knockouts. So, it's a pretty decent fight for him. Nothing else is really jumping out at me on this page. Let's see what we got on page 2 here. Getting into Saturday. That's sort of interesting. Fights going on in Hamburg, Germany on Saturday. 12-round middleweight fight between Omar Jada, who's 15-9-1 with 10 knockouts, and Turgay Uzun, who's 39-24, two draws and 26 knockouts. That's for the vacant Global Boxing Council middleweight title. And we've got Issa Akberbayev, who's 14-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Ruben Angelino, who's 25-1 with all 25 wins by knockout and has only lost by knockout. Fighting for the vacant Global Boxing Council cruiserweight title.
That's quite a style that guy must have, huh? Wow.
Yeah. 25 knockouts. Not all bums. That's tough to do. We got a fight over in Italy. Michelle DiRocco, 38-1 with one draw, 16 knockouts, fighting Casper Bruhn. He's 19-1-1 with four knockouts. That's for the EBU super lightweight title. Let's see. Man, nothing else really crazy. Yeah, we have one from Mexico. Super bantamweight female fight here. Big one. Jackie Nava, 31-4-3 with 13 knockouts. Fighting Mayra Alejandra Gomez, who's 16-3. This is for the WBJ World Super Bantamweight title and the WBC World Super Bantamweight title for females. That's down in Baja California, Mexico on Saturday. We also have Kenia Enriquez on the card, 13-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting Melissa McMorrow, who's 9-5-3 with 1 knockout. It's for the WBO World Female Flyweight title. And it's a pretty interesting card all around. A lot of good fights. Lots of good fights. Also have what looks like the mismatch of the week on this card. Jose Uzcategui, super middleweight. He's 22-1 with 18 knockouts. Fighting Daniel Eduardo Iocapicio, who is 6-27. Two draws, 13 of his losses by knockout, no knockout win.
Pretty good matchmaking. Pretty good luck. Matchmaking. Outstanding.
Good luck. His one in Nicaragua was not really a mismatch of the week, but it's pretty close. Roman Gonzalez, 41-0, with 35 knockouts, fighting Valentin Leon, 38-28. Three draws. That's on Saturday as well. Not quite as bad, but still kind of bad. That's pretty much it. Until next week. As far as I know. Missing something.
Don't forget about the biggest fight of the weekend.
Oh, here we go. Here's one.
Lockhaven University Boxing Show, Saturday night. The Tornado will be in attendance. The Tornado will be stepping into the ring again. Present a medal to somebody else who just got punched in the face.
All right. We're going to have to go
to the Sons of Italy and have a big party. Where all of us veterans get together, all the alumni, and we share stories of our greatness, and we basically tell people we were much better than we actually were. I got to tell the time about the guy that, you know, the guy was basically like a Mike Tyson clone, and I destroyed him.
Right. Well, we got a couple other fights to mention, too. I forgot about the other side of the globe. The UK. We've got some UK fights coming up Saturday. Tyson Fury, 23-0, 17 knockouts, fighting the WBO International Heavyweight title against Christian Hammer. Another good boxing name. 17-3 with 10 knockouts. Also on the card, middleweights, Dmitry Chudinov, 14-0-2 with 9 knockouts, fighting Chris Eubank Jr., who is 18-1 with 13 knockouts. We got another UK card. Northern Ireland, Denton Vassell, 21-2 with 11 knockouts, fighting Viktor Plotnikov, who's 31-2 with 15 knockouts. That's for the vacant IBF Intercontinental welterweight title. And we got Carl Frampton on this card, super bantamweight, 19-0 with 13 knockouts, fighting Chris Avalos, who's 25-2 with 19 knockouts. Very interesting matchup there. And if that's not enough, we have a third fight. Gillian White, 13-0, with 10 knockouts at heavyweight, fighting Vika Lobjanidze, who's also undefeated, 10-0, with 8 knockouts. Decent setup there. So, go to page 3, see what else we got. Oh, out in Phoenix, Arizona on Saturday. It's not televised, but we've got a 10-round heavyweight fight. Charles Martin, 19-0-1, with 17 knockouts, fighting Rafael Zumbano Love, who's 35-9-1, with 28 knockouts. Heavyweight. It's a heck of a record. All right. A lot of Saturday stuff going on this week. There's one in North Dakota. Cruiserweight Virgil Hill. 50
oh, wow.
50 wins, 7 losses, 23 knockouts. Fighting Jimmy Campbell, 11-7.
Yeah, let me ask this. Virgil Hill is a Hall of Famer, and you can't get in the Hall of Fame unless you've been retired or inactive for 5 years.
It's the
so when was he in his fight?
He's promoting it, too. And so, obviously, he can't pick this opponent. Also on the card, a guy named Tucker Pudwill, who's 40-7.
Okay.
Knockouts.
All right, Rich, you want a piece of trivia? What is Tucker Pudwill's claim to fame?
I don't know.
Tom, do you know?
No.
Okay. Would you like the Boxing Rain Man to inform you?
Do it.
Tucker Pudwill was the 50th victim and final opponent of our good friend.
Roberto Duran, huh? Okay, I remember that.
Actually, he was the 50th victim and final fight for Vinny Paz.
Oh, okay.
Duran was in his corner.
Wow. Well, how about
Okay. Must be guys night out at the nursing home. Oh. Well, guys, North Dakota. So that's it for the boxing schedule. Coming up this week.
When was Virgil Hill's last fight?
Virgil Hill's letting an eye, you're asking me. I just shut it off. Hold on. Page 3.
Don't worry about it. The only reason I'm saying that is because you can't be in the Hall of Fame unless you were retired for 5 years. And he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, oh. And it kind of reminds you when Jeff Fennec and Azuma Nelson had a rematch like 20 years later or something after their first fought. And they were both in the Hall of Fame.
His last fight was 2007.
Okay, that makes sense.
Ferhat Arslan took him to unanimous decision right after Henry Mask beat him when Henry was 30-1, also by unanimous decision. So 2007 was a bad year for Virgil Hill.
We'll see if he has any better luck. In 2015.
Right. All right, folks. Well, next week we're going to have a guest for sure. Tony's trying to get Tex Cobb.
Oh, God.
That, right?
Now I'm going to be so excited for the next couple of days. Oh, man. We'll talk about the old Reseda Country Club. Of course, that'll bring back bad memories from me. That was one of his last fights. Oh, man, this is great. All right, Tony, hope you can do it. All right, guys.
All right,
let's enjoy the fights this weekend, all right?
Talk to the week, baby.
Okay. Bye, folks.